hope you will be able to understand my funny English. It's not my language, so please excuse all the mistakes I will definitely make. I'm associated with European Mission Fellowship. It's been last 20 years. And before I tell you what's going on in our country, just a few words about the mission. It saved my life, basically, because the mission is running a biblical school, and when I was young, and when the totalitarian regime fell in our country, I was able to come to the UK and study theology and apologetics and history and philosophy, and it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. You have to understand that being young means I didn't know much. I didn't understand. I somehow felt there is God, there must be something, but I had no real understanding. I had questions. How do we know there is God? How do we know that Bible is the book? What about other books? And number of other questions. And there was no literature at that time available in our language. My English was weak and small. And so when I came to Wellin, it used to be the European Mission Fellowship used to be settled in Wellin in the UK. That 1 year of studying Louis Berghoff and Jonathan Edwards and Francis Schaeffer and C.S. Lewis and all the authors that are available in English and were not available to me, it was like a revelation, really. It saved my life, saved my faith, and helped me to understand why I believe what I believe. And when I returned home after 1 year of studies, I finished my original studies, which was education. I'm originally a teacher. And when I came back, I somehow knew that I need to use what I received. And so I finished quickly my studies, and then I was called by one little congregation, which was a really small group, and they had dream to plant a church, and so they needed someone to lead it. So they called me and my wife, and that's how we started. But before we go to that church plant, am I standing in your way? No? Okay. About Europe. Czech Republic is here. And some information about Czech Republic. It is approximately 10 million people living there. And we are unfortunately quite well known for not believing in anything. That's my little observation. People are closed. They have everything they need, and these days, it wasn't like that before, but today they are doing well, and they are occupied just with their own interests or hobbies or families, simply themselves. And to me, it is a process of closing. They are closed. And when you approach them with a message which invites them to open, open to your neighbor, open to the nature, open to the other, and ultimately open to God. They are not interested very much. I'm not complaining. That's simply how it is. And so that's our religious situation in our country. This is Prague, but I'm not from Prague. I'm from this little place where the mark is. This place is called Nové Město nad Metují. You don't need to bother with pronunciation. It's a small, relatively small town. This one little evangelical congregation, that's us. It's a beautiful countryside, mountains, we call them Eagle Mountains. It's historic and it's beautiful, and it's also communistic or post-communistic. You know, it's also ugly. These ugly buildings are there as well. And that's my family 10 years ago, and that's us today, very quickly. And now, 18 years ago, we, you know, little group, 27 people, we bought this building. It used to be a slaughterhouse. I don't know if I told you last time. Old slaughterhouse. It was almost for no money, so that's why we bought it. And that was the plan. You know, that's just the plan. We simply there was no civil center or gathering place. We used to gather in the basement of one senior's house, but it wasn't the right place simply, and so we thought we need to build our own church building. And so we started. First we took it down. And then we built it. I wish it was that quick. It took us 2 years, and we basically built it. Oops. Okay. Now it's done. That's usually how congregations, evangelical congregations, do or build their buildings. There is not enough money to pay a professional firm, so we build it ourselves. That's just another angle of the building, and that's the people. We don't have that many people. You will see the group. This is just the opening service, the very first meeting in the house. We have quite a nice garden there and opportunity to meet, and that's why we do quite a good number of events there. I will show you. Sometimes it's with children. Sometimes we do opportunities to engage people. You know, those closed people. We want to get them out of their houses and engage them in some activity. I'll show you more later what activities. That's about the congregation, most of us. It's about 50 people altogether at the moment. These are our children. That's a Bible study. We gather once a week in our house, in our living room. So this is the meeting. And then now just few words about how to engage a culture which has tendency to be closed. few examples or several examples. We do so-called Earth Day. I don't know if you know about it, but April 22 is the Earth Day globally. It's a little bit green, you know, green ideology behind it, but we don't care about the green stuff. We just see that there is lots of rubbish in our nature, and so we organize it, we invite people, and we collect rubbish which is around the place, around the town. And it's surprising, we do it every year, and every year by the same roads and in the same places there is still new garbage, you know, people seem to throw it from their cars, or I don't know. So once a year we have this special Saturday morning, we invite people, and always there are some people from, you know, non-church people, which care also for the nature, and so they join us. We collect it, then we take it to a local, now I don't know how you call this, skládka. Help me, Mary. You know, large place where they collect all the rubbish. So we take it there. We have little excursion to show our children how much rubbish people actually produce, which is quite enlightening for children. It's just by the way, you know. And then in the end, we usually finish with some meal and nice time together. And at that moment, we usually say, and do you know why we do this? Because we care for the nature, and we care for the nature because it's God's creation. And then we engage in conversations with people. And it's really nice event. Then we do Lego project for children. You could see we have approximately 15 children in our church, but when we do this, we had to limit it last year. We said 60 children and no more, because we just cannot hold more. And of course, when the village or the city is finished, there is a final, how to call it, exposition or exhibition, and we invite parents as well. They build it 4 days, 4 afternoons, and in the end we have special event for parents. We have some meal with them. And of course, we speak on this occasion about the wonder of creativity. How come we are so creative, even in this age? And you know the answer. And that's what we try to convey to children's parents. Children, of course, love it, and their parents enjoy the fact that they can rid of their children for 4 afternoons, and then in the end we enjoy to have them in our building. We do also English camps. I don't know what will happen after Brexit, but it seems to me that we will still speak English and need to speak English. I was in Amsterdam just last week and negotiating Erasmus partnership with our university, and we didn't speak Chinese or Russian, we spoke English. So English is still the language, and people need it. And so we organize English camps. We invite native speakers, usually Americans from one particular congregation in Boston, Park Street Church in Boston. And I don't know if you cannot see this, but we are in the garden of the premises. We are using the house. It's not like going somewhere. Like we used to do that. We took the whole group and went to the mountains, to the cottage, and we had the camp there. But these days we do it quite intentionally here because we want people to know that we are there and that they can actually come. Sometimes people call me and say, could we come on Sunday? And we say, of course, it's open. But, you know, the mentality is such. So we do English camps, and then we do special events. I don't know if you know this name, probably not. That's a Czech man who... He was on that train full of Jewish children that was taken in the beginning of the war to England, and he later became a Christian, and he died now, but he traveled around the country and countries basically with his testimony called Saved Twice. And it was quite a powerful testimony, and so we invited him to our local library, and he is Czech and English, so he spoke in English, was translated, and it was quite a quite moving event. Ladies love this. So once a month we do, how do they call it? Something like that, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you understand what's going on there. And now I was introduced as a reverend or pastor. I really have two callings and two occupations, or I don't know how to call it. I have started as a teacher, originally at a local school, but I have to tell you a little story. When I returned home from the UK, you know, I was 22 at that time, after those theological studies, suddenly my perspective was different. I was again back to my at my university. I completed my studies, but suddenly I heard things differently. I have noticed that there is all the professors that are lecturing to us have their own perspective, their own understanding of things, both education and anthropology, human nature, and psychology, and you know, assumptions, pre-understandings, which you normally do not notice. But with the training which I got here, I suddenly saw that it is how to put it. It was completely secular, sometimes even anti-Christian, completely anti-Christian. And I'll give you one example. I came. It is one semester of pedagogical anthropology, they call it. Who is a human being? How do we understand a human being? Why do we need education? What is the right method of shaping a human being, or forming, you know, educating simply? Interesting questions. The professor started the first lecture, and all the questions he raised were really interesting to me. And the conclusion was, we are animals, and we will kill each other if there is no education. So we need to take that human being, and we need to form it somehow, so that one evil being does not eat or kill the other human being. Now I know that it is Thomas Hobbes and his interpretation of social contract. We are evil, and we are like wolves, says Thomas Hobbes, fighting in the evolution combat for survival. And the only way to stop this is the all-powerful institution of education. So I'm here as an educator. I'm basically a god, and I will shape you according to my whatever it is. That was the conclusion. We are all animals fighting, eating each other, killing each other, and that's why we need to be controlled, basically, by some kind of education. And I was there, and I thought, that's wrong. There is something wrong about it, and I need to figure it out, and I need to do it better. Well, you know, I was a young student, so what could I do? But at that time, I think I sense calling. I should do something about it. I should make difference, because there are better answers to these questions, and there is better understanding of human nature. There is better way of education. I just need to clarify to myself and then convey it somehow to my colleagues, my students. Simply, I decided that one day I want to be on that professor's place and do it better from biblical perspective. I didn't know how, but I made that decision and commitment. And that's why I'm talking now about university work. I'm doing it now. It took me 18 years. I had to first do all my degrees, PhDs, and so on, because that's the door opener to this world. And it is absolutely fantastic opportunity. Because in Czech Republic, I just spoke today with someone about this. It seems to me that we have more academic freedom than you have here in the UK. Because there used to be complete control over the education in past. Then it fell, fortunately, and now no one dares to touch it. You know why? You know, it's swing to the other side. So there is this freedom, and whatever I teach at the university, that's it. That's my freedom. And so I designed my syllabus. Is this English word? I designed all my syllabuses, and try to imagine. Every year I have something like 400 students coming to my lectures and seminars, and I have 12-week campaign. I can tell whatever I want. they take notes and listen very carefully, and in the end they have to come to see me for a personal conversation, to take the exam. And on top of that, they want to write their final thesis, the diploma thesis with me. So I have more requests than I can actually handle. As a pastor, how could I find such an opportunity? I have discovered that within the first year, when I started to teach at the university, within that first year, I had more conversations on spiritual subjects with people than within 10 years of my pastoral service, which is logical. As a pastor, I'm with my people, and I need to be with them and serve them. And I had to seek deliberately relationships outside of the church, and it wasn't easy. And then I came here, and I every week I had someone coming to me after a lecture, student coming and saying, "This word which you used there as a didactic tool, repentance, I have never heard that. Could you tell me more about it?" And then I said, "Oh yes, it used to be quite common word in our culture, but it is not anymore. This is what repentance means, and how it works educationally." And so I had conversations. I still have conversations like that. And that was a little discovery for me. I went there because of the students, but I realized that there are also my colleagues, a very important group, and very soon I had beautiful relationship with them and could speak with them. Now, did I tell you 5 years ago about Comenius, Jan Amos Comenius? Have you ever heard about him? No. He was born 1592 and died 1670. 54 years before your John Bunyan wrote Pilgrim's Progress, this man wrote a book about pilgrim who is wandering through the world which looks like labyrinth, who seeking paradise, a way out of the labyrinth. His famous book is called Labyrinth of the World and Paradise of the Heart. Moravian Brethren, does it ring any bell? Moravian Brethren, he was a pastor in that church, and he is called Teacher of Nations because he was one of the first systematic educationalists in Europe, they say. He laid foundations, asked the key questions like goal, method, form, content, and so on. So he is recognized. He's something between John Bunyan and Jonathan Edwards in Czech culture. He is recognized, everyone knows him, even people honor him, but because he wrote something like 200 books, nobody is reading him, nobody really knows him. And being known for wonderful educational principles and not being known for his theological foundations gives me a special opportunity to enter the dialogue with my colleagues. So, Comenius studies is a specific academic field in our country, and I focus on him, and through him I basically, don't tell anyone, smuggle Christianity to the syllabus, to the academia. These are my colleagues. These are the students. I have in 2016. I don't know if you have that in your system. We have career progress. We have PhDs, habilitations. Do you have habilitations? It's like the second degree, and then you have one more degree, and then you get the something like tenure. Tenure. I'm in that second level, which means that I do the large lectures. You know, all the future teachers, all the students, whether they study chemistry or PE or physics or whatever, they need to go through me, through my lectures. Basic philosophy of education, introduction to pedagogy, theory of education, and history of education. So I have really good opportunity to address a quite large audience. Then we have smaller seminars. This is just a one conference. That's another. I didn't know that when I first approached this work. Conferences for teachers. It is relatively closed circle of people. After 18 years, I know them all, and they know me, because those people who come to the conferences simply are those who are interested in, you know, how to do it well, to self-educate, to educate themselves, and so I have realized that it is another good opportunity to make a difference in our country. So I travel quite a lot and speak on conferences. On two occasions, I had the opportunity to speak in Czech Parliament because there is not that many people in our country who actually understand well enough the Comenius legacy. And since he is such a hero in our country, I have now there is a tendency to invite me anytime there is an opportunity to speak on Comenius. I'm usually there. And next year there is going to be big anniversary. 2020 is 350 years of his death, and so there will be larger events. Do we have an internet access here? No. Okay. No problem. Last thing I have realized at the university is books. I didn't know that before. I thought I will be just there teaching, but then my students approached me and said, okay, and so what should we read for the assignment? And I have realized I don't have that many literature to offer them, and so I started to write books, first on education in general, and then some specific subjects. Some of the books were translated, that's why I have it here in English. That's my one of my latest books, and this is the latest one. Actually, I have one more, but that's not translated yet. This title, I have to tell you a little story about this title, even if no one is looking. That's a sentence from Comenius. Something like 25 years ago, I opened his books, and I read this sentence. How to accomplish such humanity that not only knows what is good, but also desires good? and also does good even if no one is looking. And I thought, wow, that's what a statement. You know, knowing good, that's the cognitive, you know, that's the mind, desiring or loving, that's our will, our heart, you know, completely different aspect of man or human being. So it's knowing, desiring, and doing. You can know what is good pretty well, but that doesn't mean that you will do it. How to bring people to this? And it is not just knowing anything. It is knowing, desiring, and doing what is good. And you have to define these terms. And Jan Amos Comenius has wonderful definitions. And so that's how I try to address my colleagues and my students. And there is really perfect content in those old sources. So maybe before, that's the final slide, one more sentence to Comenius, 2020. When this man died, he left unfinished his greatest piece of work called Consultation Concerning Restoration of Human Affairs. That's the full title. Restoration of Human Affairs. And when he died, he urged his son, Daniel, finish it, please finish it. But he could not finish it. And so the work was left unfinished. And I was approached by a net of Christian teachers 3 years ago that we should be thinking about this anniversary, what to do with it, how to use it for good for our nation. And so I came with this idea, let's finish the book. Of course, we cannot finish it like in a proper sense, but we prepared a special project, an interactive book, seven human affairs, seven areas like politics, education, business, media, family, art, and one more. These are the seven things in the book. All these things which makes us human, this is typical for human beings. Only human beings do politics or art or education. Animals, trees, or other creatures do not do that. So that's us. And Comenius says our problem is we can both use it well and abuse it. Use and abuse. That's our problem. And many other things he says. And we want all the children in our country to know what's wrong with humanity, and what Comenius says is the restoration, how to restore humanity. So we prepared an interactive book on a web page on these seven subjects, and we invite all the schools and all the children and students to do their own consultation. Look around yourselves. Is everything all right? Are we okay as human beings? What's wrong with us? And so they will first learn what Comenius says is wrong with humanity. Then they will discuss contemporary state of humanity. And then, final step, they will be invited to identify one thing within those seven areas which they could actually themselves restore, to do something. I don't know what that may be. people invite them, look around yourselves. Is there anything to be done, maybe in your family or in your private life or in your community, or there is garbage in the river or whatever? It's up to them, you know. It will be a little adventure because we don't know what will be the result of their consultation, but that is what's going to start in 2020. And our desire is to see people, both teachers and students, being exposed to Comenius thinking, which says there is no restoration of human affairs without restoration of human heart. And that is through reconciliation to our God. That's a message that they will learn kind of by the way. Simply that's what he said, our great teacher of nations. And then we hope to see that from this theory, they will learn something for their minds, they will go and do something. So it's a big project being prepared last 3 years, and it will start soon. So maybe in here I should, the first thing to pray for, please pray for our project Comenius 2020, because we want to reach to our nation through this. Then our congregation, it is still small. We would like to grow. Of course, we want to grow. We do a number of things to reach people. You have seen some. So if you remember us in prayers, in our outreach, we will be grateful. And then my special life chapter is the university work. So if you could join me in this, I would be really happy. So thank you very much. That's us, that's our work. And